Hey, is that an Emmy behind you?
It is. It
Whoa,
is, in
okay.
fact.
Wow, okay. I didn't know that. That's something to talk about. I might actually definitely talk about that on the episode, that's for sure. Hello and welcome to episode 58 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. In this episode, we're talking to a company who is on a mission to be the premier platform for hosting IT assets, no matter where they live, remaining vendor neutral while solving accessibility problems around complex business workloads. That company is LeoStream, and I'm talking to Karen Gondoli, the CEO at LeoStream. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm thrilled to be here. 58 is my favorite number, so...
There you go. Excellent. So, look, just before we kick into the show and talk about, you know, desktop and VDI and, you know, a topic which I don't think gets enough airplay these days, I just want to remind everyone that if you like Great Things with Great Tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes, go to gtwgt.com. All episodes are on the website. Please head there and register your interest. And also go to YouTube, click like, click on the subscribe button. And also, reminder, all episodes can be accessed in all good podcasting platforms, Spotify, Anchor, and Google. Right. With that, let's kick off, Karen, and talk about LeoStream. And, you know, a company that's been around, it's, you know, nearly 20 years old, which is amazing in itself. But I'm really interested in your background. So maybe give us a little bit of an intro about yourself. And then we will come back to why there is an Emmy sitting behind you right now. So I'm fascinated by that. But give a bit of intro into yourself.
You got to have the photobomb of the Emmy in the background. So again, my name's Karen Gondoli. I have a background in aerospace engineering, actually. So I went to school at MIT. You know, you see a little brass rat over there, class ring. And then after getting out of school, actually, my background's in control system design. I actually worked on an experiment that flew in the ER-2 that you can see in the photo there.
Wow, okay.
So over the course of that, I learned control system design again was my major. And what I ended up doing right out of school was getting a job at the MathWorks doing user interface design and coding for the control systems toolbox. So this was, you know, decades ago at this point in time, but I was the original developer for the control systems toolbox UI. So that was kind of exciting.
Wow, okay, cool.
And through the course of that, you know, you learn a lot about, you know, just software development in general, UI design. I worked a lot with the usability team. So I really gathered a pretty broad base of knowledge about how do you manage software products. And worked with QA team, worked with the documentation team. So I did that for a number of years. And then, you know, as one does in their 30s, I had an epiphany and I went and became a pastry chef. And for 5 years, I was a pastry chef, which was just a wonderful time. But obviously you work some crazy hours and it's a tougher kind of life. So in 2008, I went looking for some part-time work actually at that point in time to kind of augment the pastry chef salary. And I always kept my foot in the tech industry. Even while I was a pastry chef, I was doing contracting work and consulting for user interface designs. I did a little work for NASA even during that time frame. So it was like dual role NASA pastry chef.
A little work for NASA, yeah, okay.
Yeah, just on the side.
So you got the Emmy, you've got the aeronautics, and you got like NASA thrown in as well as pastry chef. I'm liking where this is going.
Yeah, I'm a little all over the place, but it's fun. So what I did was when I was looking for this, for a part-time role, I found an advertisement in Craigslist back in the day. I looked for jobs on Craigslist for a company called LeoStream, looking for a part-time tech writer. And that was what I was doing. It's, you know, that's a pretty good contracting gig, tech writing.
Yeah.
So I answered the post. And then when I interviewed, they said, oh my gosh, look at this. You've got the user interface design background. You know how to code. You've worked with QA. You've done documentation. I had all these skills. And they said, well, they thought they were going to have to find multiple part-time people to fill this, all those different roles. And instead they said, hey, why don't you come work for us full-time because you can actually do all these things. So they hired me in as the product manager back in 2008.
Well, okay.
So I've been at the company for quite some time now.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, and I noticed that you're a marathon runner as well. So I'm not sure if that's augmenting the pastry chef situation, but balance things out, but it's a crazy and very impressive sort of history yourself. Just talk, I think we'll get to it, but I just want to hit the Emmy on the head. Like, what's the Emmy about there?
So this past September in 2022, LeoStream was honored by winning a Engineering Science and Technology Emmy from the Television Academy, and that's what you see there. Our two main developers, William Brinkley and Jeffrey Crawshaw, and a couple of others of us, I was there, and our VP of Business Development, Bob Ivanowski, we got to go to LA and accept this Emmy in a little ceremony. But essentially the reason that we were honored with this award is because over the course of the pandemic, LeoStream was very instrumental in keeping the television companies running. So we have a big footprint in media and entertainment. And so essentially what the Television Academy does is it honors technology companies that are instrumental in the media and entertainment space.
Okay. I had no idea. So that's obvious. That's a very logical link. I was going to kind of I was wondering what the actual category was, you know, to win it, but it's more like it's a bestowed sort of award, you know, based on work done.
It's a technology focused award. They give out, I think there were 8 companies this year, I guess now last year, that were honored with the award.
Well, there you go. I learn that every day, and as many episodes as I do in the future of this Great Things with Great Tech, I'll probably never have an Emmy on the show again. So that's
you never know. Never say never.
Never say never. But yeah, it's probably a little bit rare. But let's talk about LeoStream and such, because obviously you joined the company, you know, a little bit into its founding. But just give us a little bit of background about the founders, you know, why LeoStream existed, why it was created, you know, in those early years, you know, in those early 2000s, which was a crazy time for technology as well.
So the company was actually initially founded in 2002, and we weren't LeoStream Corporation yet in 2002, but the initial concept of the company dates back to 2002. And back then, our founders, this was really when it was more about server virtualization. Yep. And what they saw was this gap in the market where there was no easy way for companies to take their physical servers and migrate them, virtualize them, and migrate them into, you know, at that time it was VMware. So the technology that they originally built was what we call our P2V converter, physical to virtual machine converter. Okay. And we actually own patents on that, both in the US and in Canada. And it was just a technology that made it possible for people to very easily, while the server was running, migrate it over to a virtual machine.
Was that in place before even VMware had their converter, or was it side by side, or?
I believe it was before.
Yeah, it seems like it was before, like it was one of the first ones even. So just thinking about the time frame of VMware and when they existed and what they were doing around that, and even Microsoft. So that's interesting that's where you guys started.
Mm-hmm. And while that was going on, the other thing we realized is that while you had these hypervisors where people were virtualizing their servers, there was no real good management tool for that. There was no vCenter yet. Yeah. So alongside this P2V tool, they started creating what they called the virtual machine manager. And so it sat on top of different hypervisors, VMware and the original Microsoft virtual server, I think it might've been called. And allowed you to, you know, easily inventory machines, power control them, provision, things that you didn't have an interface for doing otherwise. Okay. And so that was the other real introductory technology that LeoStream brought to market.
That's crazy. So really you were filling, LeoStream was there filling a gap that didn't exist yet, that was still yet to be created by, you know, VMware and Microsoft for their virtualization stack. So did those products, obviously I'm thinking those products obviously, you know, petered away a little bit, because obviously the market, you know, took over and created them from within those particular juggernauts. But obviously that was a foundation for what was to come for LeoStream.
Right. The virtual machine manager, that code literally is the core of the connection broker, which is the heart of the platform that we sell right now. What happened right around the time that I was hired in 2008, that was when the company took out a round of VC funding and grew the company. And they made the decision at the time, and I say they because that was, you know, the previous CEO, they made the decision at the time to focus on more of a VDI market. Yeah. So they took the virtual machine manager and expanded it out to, you know, do pooling and have, you know, assignment rules and all of the other types of things that you would need to really manage hosted desktop environments. So they kind of left the server virtualization behind. And actually at that point in time, sunsetted the P2B tool. Most everybody had migrated their machines over and just focused on the technology, which is what we sell today.
That's crazy. That's a fantastic pivot, but it's a pivot while leveraging existing technology as well. So you're not kind of reinventing the wheel, you're repurposing the technology because there was a different use case for it. And that in itself has allowed you guys to grow to where you are today, which is, that's a really cool story. And I would actually, I'm just thinking about it. Obviously we're talking a little bit about my background, you know, and what I was doing back in those days. And it was all around early virtualization, hosting, you know, different platforms. And I would bet you that I would have used that software at some point. I just can't picture it, right? And people listening are probably thinking back going, yeah, maybe I did use that P2V, or maybe I did use that first VMM because there was nothing else to connect, you know, different hypervisors and whatnot. So that's a really cool story to start with. But so then VDI, I mean, we joked about this earlier, and we can't do a episode where VDI is somewhat central to the story and talk about, you know, the bad reputation that VDI generally gets in the industry for whatever reason. I know you've got some thoughts on that, but what was it, just the timing with, at the time, I'm thinking 2010-ish, we had Citrix doing its thing around, you know, remote desktops and VDI. VMware was doing Horizon and you know, that acquisition. Was LeoStream there to be a player within those particular markets at the time?
So LeoStream we swim in an ocean of giants. So VMware, Citrix, Microsoft, and then you have LeoStream. And most people say, huh, LeoStream, really, who's that? The companies that use us love us and need the technology we have. And that's the thing, is we have always focused on the problems that these other companies cannot solve. So if you look back to 2008, 2010, where was LeoStream big? We were big in the financial industry because we could support actual connections to hosted workstations. This is when the trading floors were taking workstations out from underneath trading desks and putting them in the data center, and then needed a connection broker to actually manage connections into those remote workstations. So it wasn't VDI, these were physically hosted machines. And at the time, it was a lot of HP RGX protocol. So that was one use case. Another thing was Linux. Back in those days, VMware, Citrix, they couldn't do Linux VDI, but LeoStream could. So we essentially partnered, you know, what do they call it, co-opetition. We were in the space where VMware and Citrix were, but we were satisfying these use cases that sat along beside them. So companies would have VMware Horizon for their call center VMs, or Citrix and desktop at the time for a bunch of RDS sessions. And then they'd have LeoStream to handle these use cases of Linux or hosted workstations, high performance display protocol connections, and various other things like that.
Because I guess what you're saying is, obviously, you know, through, you know, your own R&D, your own innovations, your own IP, you've effectively taken the connection, the VMM tool, put it to connection broker, and you've just basically made more efficient the whole way to connect, you know, remote desktops, no matter where they are, remote machines across different platforms, different environments. So it's not specifically VDI as such. It's more remote connectivity for workloads, no matter where they are. And you're kind of addressing the needs that, you know, were there that VMware and Citrix couldn't do back in the time through Linux and whatnot. So you've created your own IP to basically find that niche and then grow from there.
Right. And a lot of it too is, our whole premise is that we do not want our customers to have to conform to what a workflow that we define. We want them to define their workflow. So we have always, over the course of all these years, developed features and integrations that are tailored for what our customers need, so that we can make them successful. Because ultimately, that's the key, is we're a very customer-focused company, and we want to make sure that they can connect their users to their business resources in the way that works best for them.
And I noticed as well along the way, and in a not very typical sort of Silicon Valley / you know, IT way, you're fairly self-funded, aren't you? Like bootstrapped yourself. There's not a ton of funding that's gone in externally. Mm-hmm. So it looks like you've been able to basically, and I think that tells me that you've been successful in bootstrapping your own success effectively.
Yes. I mentioned that in 2008, we took out the round of funding and then essentially didn't after that. And actually back in, I think it was 2017 or 2018, we purchased all the shares back. So now LeoStream is completely owned by the current and previous employees.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about VDI as such, and if you want to call it desktop as a service, or just remote connectivity, I guess, is what you guys do, because you guys have the software. You've got four main components of the software that effectively act as a brokerage for an admin to come in, set up pools of desktops or workstations, no matter what they might be. And I've even seen you guys talk about connecting into containerization platforms and OpenStack and, you know, public cloud. So you're really spreading, and we'll talk about the hybrid cloud a little bit later on. But what's your take on the current state of, you know, VDR or desktop as a service as it is? Because like I said in the beginning, it does get a very bad rep. And I think for the longest time, in fact, I've told this story often, that one of the first things I've worked on in my career 20 years ago was we had a remote Microsoft desktop offering. And I remember going out to a law firm and trying to get this remote desktop working, but it was on they were on ADSL connection that was worse than, you know, your mum's connection 20 years ago, right? And this was not working. And that's always been the problem with this side of technology. There's a reason why there was a joke about the year of VDI, but I think we've reached a point where connectivity and the technology that underpins it is just so advanced that it's almost it's not a point of discussion anymore. It's still a thing, clearly, but how do you shake that sort of that mantra of it being VDI?
To me, I think the first thing to do is to just chuck the whole VDI term in general.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, just get rid of it. Because the thing about VDI, it's a concept that's touted around by these behemoths, by VMware, Citrix, Microsoft. And again, it's a construct that they want you to conform your business to. And ultimately, that is not good for your business. You want to be able to run it and satisfy the workflows that work best for you. And so that's, I think, where things are now is that there are a number of other technologies like LeoStream or display protocol vendors like Mectine and their TGX and more hype and more public cloud offerings. There are a lot of different technologies now that allow you to kick the VDI stack out and say, let me build something that works for my environment. And it's true that that does require an IT team that actually knows how to build something, which not everybody has. But there are solutions providers out there that can help. Yeah. And I think that's the key, is the industry is going in that direction where it's really about build something that works best for you, or find someone who can help you that build something that works best for you, instead of having to roll in these stacks and just do VDI or, you know, RDS, however they want to term it these days.
Yeah. So talk about the platform itself and the components, and just, you know, I've heard you get pretty deep in the weeds on this as well. So I'm pretty happy to go down the weeds and, you know, talk a little bit about how it's set up, how it's different. And, you know, and in doing that, you know, breaking people's mindset of this being VDI, like, you know, okay, LeoStream of the platform, let's talk about it and how it works.
Okay. So there's four pieces. The main part, what I call the brains of the operation, is the connection broker. And that's what is rooted in that VMM, the virtual machine manager technology that we have. And first of all, it's unique because it runs on Linux. So don't worry about needing a nice expensive Windows Server license to host our connection broker. It runs on top of RHEL 8 right now, or Rocky, any kind of derivative like that. And it essentially is where IT admins go to build the pools, connect to all the different parts of their infrastructure, including hosting platforms, authentication servers, all the different display protocols that we want to support. So the connection broker is really the piece that defines the access control rules. It's what's handling the user authentication. And then after that, depending on if your user is remote or not, they might get passed over to the second part of the platform, which is the LeoStream gateway. The gateway is, to me, it's new because I've been here since 2008, but the gateway was introduced in 2016.
Okay, yeah.
And it essentially moved LeoStream from an on-prem solution to a full remote access solution.
Interesting. Because, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it is essentially the VPN replacement piece,
okay,
or whatever kind of, you know, security gateway that you want. Yeah. And the gateway, again, installs on Linux, and it does two things. One, it has a built-in HTML5 viewer. So even if you are entirely still on-prem, you can use the gateway to have, you know, in-browser connections, and that's for any remote operating system. You know, I mentioned that we do Linux, but we can connect users to and from Windows, Linux, and Mac. So we're very operating system agnostic there. So the gateway has the HTML5 component. Great if you're doing BYOD, you don't want to install clients on people's devices. The gateway also is that key for remote access. Essentially, what it does is, based on instructions from the connection broker, it's almost like an enterprise NAT, but an automated one. It will say, okay, this user coming in from this client IP is allowed to connect into this particular machine, you know, be that in the cloud or on-prem. And the gateway manipulates its own firewall to create these rich rules that directs traffic just from certain IPs to certain IPs. Then as soon as the broker says, you know what, that user is no longer entitled to use that asset anymore, the gateway closes the connection and shuts down that port.
So is the connection broker obviously independent components, because one came before the other, but then they work together. But the connection broker is that brain where you set the policy, tell it who can access what, and then it basically talks to the gateway that may or may not be close to the broker. I mean, it might be somewhere else. Can you install gateway clusters as well and have them all sort of talking together through the one connection broker?
Yeah, the way you can architect our AlioStream environment is actually pretty unique, because these are decoupled. The broker installs on one Linux machine, the gateway installs on another, and both of those can be clustered, and they're kind of clustered independently. So the broker you can cluster to handle higher login storms. You know, the broker essentially, it's doing work when users are logging in. That's when it's talking to your authentication servers, maybe doing MFA. That's when it's, you know, doing database reads to figure out what policy does this user get? What am I connecting them to? So you can cluster brokers to handle login storms and for failover. And then once the broker says, okay, you know what, this user, I'm going to connect them to a machine that's hosted up in AWS. That means I need to send that user through this particular gateway cluster. So if you're creating a hybrid environment, maybe you've got on-prem, maybe you've got Azure, maybe you've got AWS, you have a cluster of gateways that handles each of those environments.
Yep.
And the broker knows which cluster of gateways to send the user through based on where it's connecting. So it actually is, again, it's unique that we've decoupled these systems and that you can architect in such a way.
And that's what enables the hybridity in terms of, you know, you've been able to as a end user, being able to go on and maybe, you know, you guys are, or company is facilitating a workload in Azure, but then also there's some particular workload that's in Google, as an example. And so that one user could access both systems, you know, depending on what they're doing. That's kind of where this comes into play. Do the gateways, are there any backward connectivity between the different clouds through the gateways, or are they all kind of independent, if you know what I mean? So if you connect in through a gateway in Azure, can you then basically get your way to a machine that's in Google, as an example?
You could. We haven't seen people do that, but it's just...
I come up with crazy ideas.
I take that back. There was one case where people were hopping, because they would, and in their case, it was not going from cloud to cloud, but they wanted to change the display protocol that they were using. So they would log into AlioStream, connect, and this may not be the exact use case, but they would log into AlioStream, connect using, say, you know, HP Remote Boost to a particular machine. And then from that machine, they would log into AlioStream again and hop off to another machine using a different display protocol. So I can think of one case that is not a common use case.
Not common. You had a solution for it, but a bit trick, which is pretty cool. That shows a bit of flexibility. So okay, so you've got the connection broker, you've got the gateway, you've mentioned I guess the agent is basically what goes on those machines to be able to enable, you know, the remoteness of that actual workload.
The agent is a really interesting component, because I call it small but mighty. Right now there are two versions. There's a Java version for installing on Linux and Mac. We are in the process of getting rid of the Java-ness of that agent.
Yeah.
Because we realize people don't necessarily like that. And then the other is a native Windows client, native Windows agent. So at some point in time, there will be a single agent that installs on all platforms. Right now there are two. But they are essentially identical in that what the agent is doing is monitoring the user's desktop connection and relaying that information back to the connection broker. So it's things like, did the user connect? You know, if you think about an RDP session, I can connect, but then I have to log into the operating system. That's actually two steps.
Yeah.
So the agents distinguishes these. Did the user connect? Did they log in? Did they disconnect? Did they go idle? And those kind of events go back to the connection broker. And then IT can use those events to automate tasks. And this is really where the power of the broker comes from. So while we say the agent is optional, because there are some organizations that say, you know what, I can't install anything on my remote operating system. So we say, fine, you can use us without the LeoStream agent, but you really miss out on all the cool, powerful features, because it's that knowledge of what's going on in the user session. How long have they been idle? Yeah. Oh, they've been idle for a half hour. You know what? I'm going to forcefully log them out because they probably aren't using that machine anymore. Yeah. And that way I can power it down if it's in the cloud, so I'm not paying for it, or I can terminate it and boot up a new one, so there's a fresh machine for the next user. But yeah, the agent is really critical for getting all the functionality.
You've hit two critical points that are common in conversation whenever I'm talking, to CEOs or CTOs, whatever it might be, which is cost and security. You've hit those two with that. So that's obviously high on the use case for, what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's two of the key things that we talk about. You want to be able to manage costs, particularly if you're in a cloud, because, if the machine exists, you're paying for storage. If it's running, you're paying for compute. And so you want to be able to manage those states, and you want to be able to do it automatically, because IT doesn't want to have to sit there and, log into all the different cloud consoles and see what's running. And from the cloud console, you wouldn't know if someone's using it or not, but you can look in LeoStream and say, yep, I've got 10 machines in this pool running, 9 of them are in use, 1 of them's not, maybe I should power that down. And you have one single platform for doing that across all these different environments. And so that's a very powerful tool, and it's a way to save IT time as well. From a security standpoint,
go ahead with the security. That's important to talk about the security.
The security, I think that comes into a play in a few ways. One is authentication. Now I was talking with CISO yesterday, and it's like everything requires MFA. You can't do anything without MFA.
Yeah.
And LeoStream has a number of different ways that you can implement MFA to log into your LeoStream environment. And most of our customers, what they want to do is use their corporate identity provider. They're an Okta shop, or they're a Google Workspaces shop. So the users can log in to LeoStream from those identity providers. So it's a nice seamless end user experience. But then beyond authentication, it's really about access control. IT has very fine grained control. It's not, hey, connect through your VPN and you're opened up to the data center at large. It's, hey, here's the particular machine I have allowed you to use, but I'm only letting you use it for 4 hours, and then I'm gonna boot you off. And potentially you can only use it when you're logging in from home. So if you travel, I'm going to route you up to the cloud in a more isolated environment. But if you're working from home, I'll let you connect to the data center. So it's all these different types of access control rules that IT can implement and then are automated, so they don't have to sit there and manage that on their own.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that's a massive value that you guys add to this whole equation, right? Like, I think we talked about, solving the accessibility problems for complex business workloads at the start. That's without something like that, which handles those sort of specific situations, security concepts, costing, IT organizations probably would use a combination of different platforms and applications, right, to actually achieve what you guys are achieving there.
Yeah, the day two operations for IT is an interesting use case, because I actually sat with a customer who said, before we use LeoStream, they were physical workstations, for example. He's like, before we use LeoStream, I had to walk around. If a machine needed to be rebooted, he's like, I had to walk over to the room and hit the button. But now you just do that using the LeoStream agent and the interface, the administrator interface that the connection broker provides. So it's a lot of that, and it's a lot of just monitoring usage. Another interesting story that I heard from a customer kind of touches on the security was, because the agent is reporting all this information to the broker and the broker is logging it, IT really does have a good window into the usage of all their assets across all these platforms in a single interface.
Yeah.
And a customer even told me, he's like, oh, you know, I was able to see in the broker someone logging in from a location that was not, that didn't look right. And so they were able to look for outliers and users' behavior. They could see, hey, did something, did someone hack my system? Did something go wrong?
So talk about how, you know, you guys, you mentioned before, you kind of like, I don't know how you sort of phrased it, but, you know, you're obviously competing against the behemoths of the world, you know, the Citrixes, the VMwares. Like, how did LeoStream was able to sort of get that foothold? I know that you guys are big on customer, you know, relationship and whatnot, but was there a particular thing that you guys did to disrupt that market? Because you have to be somewhat disruptive to be able to beat those guys at effectively their own game, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, LeoStream has always been the champion of the IT department. And typically what happens is they'll be, and whether it's through a Google search or word of mouth or something, an IT admin or system integrator will find LeoStream and really become a champion for the company and the product because they understand the power and they appreciate the fact that we're a company that really kind of bends over backwards to make sure that you can do what you need to with our platform. You know, we don't do custom development. We always design features in a way that we think will drive the market in general, but we get that feedback and we're very nimble. So we have a very agile development environment. And if someone needs something, we're not waiting for a release train to put it out. We say, oh, you've got this problem. You know what? We're going to fix that real quick. And then we're going to do a patch build, get it through QA and send it out and put it out. And I think it's because of that. It's because of the agileness of our development and the attitudes of our team and our general love for technology that we find these champions and they'll push us through their organization.
Yeah, well, I mean, we obviously, you know, I'm pretty au fait with internal advocacy, strategic partnerships, and, you know, finding those champions that, you know, and we're all very tribal in IT, and when we find something that we love, we stick to it, and we kind of, you know, it becomes our team, right? So obviously, you guys have found a way to sort of win in the, we call it, you know, in the technical decision maker space. You guys obviously have quite a strong foothold because the technology must be good. You know what I mean?
It's funny because we actually just a week or so ago, Bob, who I mentioned earlier, our VP of Biz Dev, he said, oh, hey, this particular customer just contacted me. I'm not going to throw out his name, but I was like, wait, you mean so-and-so from like literally 10 years ago? He changed companies. He was looking for a solution. Yeah. And people who have used our product and worked with our team are very sticky.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's what you want, right? And that shows a couple of things. It shows, again, that you're doing the right job in terms of the actual tech and your target, but also the fact that you're releasing pretty good software that does that kind of, to borrow an adage from where I work, it just kind of works. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's very important at the same time. Hey, talk a little bit about, the one thing that we didn't probably talk about was the fact that, you know, from the LeoStream platform, you can go in there and effectively you're talking to these cloud APIs, the platforms. I noticed you've got a marketplace image for AWS, obviously pretty strong on the AWS space itself, but you're actually talking to those clouds to be able to, you mentioned cost optimization. So you're talking to the APIs to handle the provisioning of these workloads on the fly through effectively your own level of automation, right? And infrastructure as code. That's kind of how I'm reading that.
Yep, that's exactly it. So in the connection broker, you define what we call centers. And a center is essentially a hook into whatever hosting platform you want to use. And you can combine as many different hosting platforms as you want. So AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, we support all of those. OpenStack, we were actually probably the first vendor to support VDI type workloads on OpenStack. We've had that integration for years now. Obviously the different hypervisors like VMware, physical workstations, there's a whole, and then hyperconverged infrastructures. We haven't really talked any about that, but we do support three different hyperconverged infrastructure
vendors. Actually, I noticed that I think Verge.io was one that you guys noticed. And I had them on the show probably three episodes ago. So there you go. So kind of a coming together there, right? But and so interesting with OpenStack as well, because I've I have seen a bit of a resurgence of that over the past couple of years as well. So the timing is right there, I think, to be able to have an option for that. So I think people with options in OpenStack will do very well moving forward at the same time. So just talk a little bit about, you've got a partner program and a reseller program. Is that part of how you guys operate as well in terms of how you get your distribution in play?
It is, yeah. So historically, we've always sold both direct and through resellers. And we're really making an effort over the last couple of years, and you'll see it a lot more in this year coming, to expand out the channel and really enable them. So we're building out a new partner portal and putting together training resources to really train the resellers up. Because it is true, because we are an enterprise product, and because we have been doing this for so long, it is very feature rich. And so being able to know exactly how you configure it the best for your environment can be something that it requires a little bit of training to do. Yeah. And so we're looking at building up those kind of resources over the course of the year. We've signed up distributors over the last few years. So we're looking at getting more into the Fed space through our partnership with Carahsoft. So yeah, it's been very exciting to watch the channel grow.
Awesome. That's pretty cool. I guess scale is achieved through resellers and partners in this world. You know, if you can handle that as a distribution force, then you're going to do very well as well. And together with what you've done with regards to winning the hearts and minds. Just to finish off, because we're nearly out of time, I told you it would go pretty quick. What do you think is in store for, you know, again, I'll say VDI, desktop as a service, and hybrid cloud and remote access, you know, in the next, now that we've gone through the weirdness that was COVID and we're moving more into more standard operations, you know, where do you see this going now in the next sort of 3 to 5 years?
I think what we're seeing is that the standard operations is going to include a certain amount of remote work. And because, and remote doesn't necessarily mean I'm letting my users work from home. Remote also means I can be productive from anywhere. As you want to allow your employees to be productive from anywhere, then that kind of frees you from the confines of your data center. And so we're seeing people intelligently move more workloads to the cloud. Not every workload belongs in the cloud. So you want to move the appropriate ones there and then have a hybrid environment where you work for, you know, across different cloud regions, as well as with your on-prem data center, or maybe you move things to a colo. But again, you want to be able to define that environment in a way that works best for you, but still have a way to manage it, which, you know, obviously is LeoStream. We're also, as part of this hybrid approach, we're adding more functionality into our environment to support that. Things like, you know, we're integrating with Workspace's core. We put that press release out a couple weeks ago to announce that integration work is going on. So we're really excited about that. We're adding more functionality in around scheduling access, again, as a way to control costs and ensure that assets are allocated appropriately. So it's really about that. It's about giving people the control to define their environment and embrace this hybrid world, both from the platforms you're hosting on and where users can work from.
Awesome. Hey, great stuff. And that's a really good way to end. And hey, look, thanks for being so insightful about LeoStream. Again, you know, I love what you guys are doing. I love that a company that, you know, has survived through, you know, some really interesting times in the space is still doing so well and going to be so much stronger moving forward. So, you know, thanks for that. And thanks, Karen, for being on the show. Just as a final reminder, again, if you aren't subscribed to Great Things with Great Tech, please head to the website, click subscribe, and go to GTWGT for all future episodes. And with that, thank you, Karen. Thank you, LeoStream. And we will see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. We've got 10 seconds left.